Hello there, folks, and welcome to the Punch Like a Girl podcast. I'm Nathaniel.
And I'm Liz.
So this is the show where the two of us take a look at graphic novels or trade collections featuring female protagonists. And we're getting into a trade collection with this one. And it is the one and only Ms. Marvel. We are taking a look at volume number one, which is also known as No Normal. So before we get into anything else, Liz, this was one that I think I put it on the list, but you had actually, you were aware of this even before I did that, weren't you?
Yes. I had gone to the American Library Association Midwinter Conference in Boston last year, and they had discussed that on a graphic novel panel I had kind of sat in on and observed, and it did make their list, I think in 2016. For one of the best graphic novels out that year and recommended graphic novel for young adults.
So this this volume, I don't, what was the year? This was 2015. Mm-hmm. Was the year this actually came out, and this did win the 2015 Hugo Award for Best Graphic Story, and it has had later volumes nominated for the same award. I think it's up for it again this year, actually. I think volume five it is. I'm not sure. Whatever's the most recent volume is up for that same award this year. So this is pretty well praised stuff. So we'll get into the synopsis in a minute. Did you have anything else before we got going?
Nope. I mean, I think I had heard about it a little bit in my library circles that it was popular and that this was a really new take for Marvel, so I was excited to hear that.
For credits, the writer on this was G. Willow Wilson. Art was by Adrian Alfona. Coloring was Ian Herring, and the letterer was Joe Magna. There were various cover artists, but unless we start talking about any of the specific covers, we'll bring those artists up at the time. Otherwise, I'm going to move on as far as credits go. So this has a little bit different setting than Marvel usually does, because Marvel, somewhat infamously at this point, sets the vast majority of their stuff in New York, New York City specifically. This time, we're in New Jersey. So it's
Jersey City.
Yeah. And focusing in on the character of Kamala Khan, who is 16. She is a Pakistani-American, and she is the youngest of a Muslim family. And she's just a teen girl, and she thinks the Avengers are cool, and she loves, in particular, Carol Danvers, who at this point is Captain Marvel, though previously she had been known as Ms. Marvel. And there is an incident that's actually the result of kind of a crossover event. And I won't dive too much into this, but just because comics are weird, as many people know, I'll dive into it deeply, or just I'll skim it. So, part of another event ended in the detonation of what was called the Terrigen Bomb. So, the Terrigen Mist is what it sounds like. It is a mist, and it is normally used by a branch of superhero characters in Marvel called the Inhumans. Too complicated to get into, but short version is they have superpowers that basically lay dormant until the mist hits them, and then the mist causes whatever their latent superpower is to manifest. And when the Terrigen Bomb was set off in the upper atmosphere and the mist basically wafted over the entire planet, anyone that it hit who happened to have inhuman genes in there somewhere, or the correct inhuman gene, the right mix of them, they then develop superpowers, and that's what happens to Kamala. She is out one night against her parents' wishes, gets hit with this mist, and then suddenly she has a power that is, it's kind of shape-shifting. It's kind of a shape-shifting with an emphasis on stretching, I think might be the best way to
I say that's a good way to
describe it. But it is kind of both. It's not quite just stretching, which is Mr. Fantastic stuff, and it's not just shape-shifting, so it's not quite Mystique. It is a kind of a blend with an even...
And she can go really big, and she can go really little. So yep. I guess that's kind of part of the stretching, but that's also sort of its own thing. But her arm and hands are especially affected.
Yeah, she can make very big fists.
Yes.
And her first instinct when she realizes she can do this is to become a superhero. And it kind of follows her attempts to do that, her issues with trying to do that, the things that she encounters in her own town that might actually warrant a superhero being involved. And the volume, I'm not going to say it ends on a cliffhanger, but this being... one that was, you know, this was intended to be an ongoing series as opposed to most of the other trades we looked at. It's not intended to, like, be as much of a complete story. This is pretty much, this volume is just the origin story. And it doesn't get, like, what will probably be her first major villain gets introduced by the end, but is not dealt with yet. So that's just a setup for later stories. So we'll get into more details as we talk about specific things, but overall thoughts.
I liked it. I think what I felt was that I'm looking forward more to the next couple volumes. Like, I definitely want to keep reading, but I felt a little bogged down in the fact that it was an origin story, But I realize, you know, it has to start somewhere. I think the message, while important, like, oh, it's okay to be yourself and embrace who you are, was a little heavy-handed at points. Like, she was like, oh, I want to look like Miss Marvel in this, or Captain Marvel in this shape-shifting ability. And then, you know, learned that, no, she is this Pakistani Muslim geeky teen girl, and to embrace that, which I think is a great message, but I think it was a little too obvious, and like she made up her mind rather quickly about that. I would have liked, in some ways I was like, I get this struggle, but I would have liked a little more struggle, and at the same time not that to be like, let's hit this home, this message. So I think that annoyed me a little bit. That being said, I love the character of Kamala. I love her family. I really like her parents and her brother, even though he's a little sanctimonious, but he is protective as well. Yeah, I really like her parents. I really like that we get to know her dad's a bit of a softy. There's a really touching scene between them. I love some of the details in the books, like things like the shirts they're wearing. At one point her friend Bruno has like a reference to Back to the Future on his shirt. There is a flying sloth in the mist, a sloth with wings, which I don't know why it's there. I think it's just a random detail, but it made me so happy because it's a sloth with wings. Random, but it's amazing, and I'm a big sloth fan, just so you know. There's just really like little funny asides in terms of things that are written on the gas station. Let me look at some of my notes, but there's a lot of fun to be had. I think my main issue was that it was the origin story part of it dragged on a bit for me, and I think that's why I didn't read it. For as much as I enjoyed it, I didn't read it that fast. I took a couple weeks on this one. But I think it was also because I wanted to catch all those little funny details. So you didn't want to just like skim it over. You were like, oh God, what's in the art? Like what? I think one of the henchmen of the main villain had a shirt that said like, I'm a bad guy on it. Like, and just these little quirky, like snarky things that were added in the details. There was like a slurpy thing that was like a radioactive razzleberry squelchy or something. It was called a circle Q instead of a circle K. So that was a cute little detail. MeTube instead of YouTube. There was just a lot of like funny little details that I liked about this. Yeah, so I think that's my main take on it.
I want to ask, because I get what you're saying about the, it is pretty on the nose on the embrace yourself message. But at the same time, I can't help but think that that's probably a good call given, you know, Kamala's background and the fact that she is representing both a ethnicity and a religion that, at least in American culture, I think kind of has an instinct to hide and not embrace themselves because there is a ridicule level for that. So in a vacuum, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Just sort of looking at it for how hard and how repeatedly and how quickly the embrace yourself message is hit. But for the audience that this is written for and for what she represents as a character, I think that it's, and again, from a strictly narrative perspective, I'm not sure that it necessarily makes it cohesive, but knowing when this came out, who she is, where the country is as a whole, I think it makes a lot of sense to hit that hard as opposed to have her struggle with it more, because then it's almost like you're reinforcing the doubts that that population already has about themselves.
That's a good point. As an educator, I'm like, this is a good message. Let's promote this and do that. As a reader of a graphic novel, like casual reader, I'm like, yeah, I don't need this hit upon again and again and again. I get it. But for her audience, yeah, I think that it does make sense. And I think given the social and political climate we're in right now, it is a very important message to make. So I think, but there's part of me, the selfish reader part of me, that's just like, I want to get to the bad guy. I want to see her teaming up with people. Come on, can we get to that stuff? I want volume 2 essentially right now. And I like, again, so much I liked about it. Love her family. Love that they don't shy away from, they're not like, oh, she's a Muslim, and then we're going to completely ignore that. No, I mean, like, there's a scene that takes place in the mosque. There's some language details in there. There's a lot. They embrace it. They embrace her religion.
They do. I think part of the way they balance that is that she's not the most devout member of her family.
Yes.
So that, but because there are other members of her family who are a bit, more into the practice of that, of their religion, and you can still see that it's still an important part of her family life. It's not like she's rebelling against it, but because she's not as steeped in it, you still get a good dose of it without feeling like it's being hit over the head too much.
Yeah, she is I think she's a well-balanced character. I think there is a little bit of a mischievous side to her, but she is, I think, essentially, you know, a good, honest person that wants to bring good into the world. But there's this little bit of a fun, geeky side to her, and they're like, well, I'm gonna do what I have to do to help the world, and sometimes it'll get me in trouble. I'm gonna break my curfew once again.
Yeah, she's a very altruistic character in that sense, and that literally her first instinct as soon as she has powers is, great, I can help people.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, to make comparisons to, say, Marvel's most famous character, people tend to forget this, but Spider-Man's first instinct, once he realized he had powers, was, how can I make money off this?
Yes. Yeah, that is
which is a completely understandable thing, but it's there's something nice about a character who their first instinct when they have power is to do the best they can. And there's a line, and it's such a good line, I have to imagine it's pulled from somewhere else, but I don't know where, but I love it anyway, so I'm going to quote it. And she says this to herself as like a pump, as a pep-up thing. It says, good is not a thing you are, it's a thing do.
I quoted that too. I had it written down. It's great.
That, like I said, that is such a good line that and this is not me being like, there's no way that author came up with that, but like, that is so good and so succinct, it must that can't be new. That must have been around for a while.
And if it isn't, it should now be a thing.
Yes. If G. Willow Wilson came up with this, you know, my God, give her every prize in the world and put that on half my t-shirts right now.
And it really encompasses who she is and her approach to being a superhero. You know, you do good. Like, you don't cut yourself on the back for it. You just keep going forward, so.
And they also, they have a nice contrast with that with the character, because I wrote this one down when I was re-skimming it. The character of Zoe.
Oh God, Zoe's awful.
Zoe, the concern troll.
I hate her.
I she's the kind of person that I hate. I love her inclusion as a character, though, especially in contrast to what we just talked about. You know, good is not something you are, it's something you do. Because Zoe is the quintessential person who goes, oh, I'm such a good person. I'm so, oh, your family's not gonna like honor kill you because you snuck out and came to this party, are they? I'm just concerned. Like, she's not a good person, but she believes she is so hard. Mm-hmm. It's infuriating, but it's a great contrast to that sentiment.
She's just so passive aggressive.
Oh, she's awful. She's the worst.
So yeah, she's that kind, I wrote that, she's that kind who knows how mean she is. She knows that she's awful, but she tries to mask it and pretends to be all good-natured and like concerned about Kamala and concerned about everyone, but is really just being awful kind of. Yeah.
So so that we can talk some of the supporting cast. She's got Bruno,
yes,
who is her friend that
has a massive crush on her.
He does.
He's so, yeah.
Do you think she just doesn't realize it, or
I don't think she quite fully realizes it. I don't think she's got a lot going on when you're faced with superhero powers and you're not
fair.
Supposed to keep sneaking out, and like especially sneaking out to meet a boy who's helping you, like, figures things out. That would not fly in her family, so it might be a little bit purposely ignoring the fact that, yeah, maybe her friend has a crush on her. Like, which I get and have done in the past. Like, I know what that's like. So, I could see that happening. She also doesn't seem like the type that would be like, oh yeah, he likes me. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
She's a little too awkward and, like, preoccupied with other things, too. Really think about, oh, so-and-so has a crush on me. So
now here's a question relating to her family that I came across this and I understand it, but I'm of two minds of it. Mm-hmm. Now by and large this was kind of, you know, embraced and praised within, you know, the American Pakistani community, within the American Muslim community. There were some, And they're a minority, but there were some who expressed concern that her family is too stereotypical in terms of a Muslim family, in terms of the controlling parents, in terms of the brother who, you know, is saying how he'll pray for her and she needs to go to the mosque more. And there was some degree of concern that it reinforces that some of the depiction of her family reinforces a stereotype. And I'm not in a position to say whether or not it's true, but I did notice that in people who argued against that, and they never refuted that is a stereotype. Mm-hmm. So I'm prepared to just kind of roll with that it is to a certain extent. And I guess the question becomes, how much of a problem is that?
Again, I don't know enough about, like, the inner workings of, you know, what stereotypes, other than the obvious, gross, misinformed stereotypes that work about the
It's country. Obviously not working in with those.
It's not working with those, so I don't have enough to say on that. I think I think even within the book itself, I started to get to see the other sides of her family. Like, that her dad is kind of a softy and, like, sweet. And, like, they have a great
little Her dad is... Her mom's a little one-dimensional, at least in this volume.
Her mom is a little bit of the overbearing, protective, like, oh my God, where were you kind of mom, which actually the way her parents interacted with her and with each other reminded me of a friend of mine and her parents, who I'm really fond of, like one of my best friends. So I kind of like that because I had a personal connection to it, but I guess I could see that, but I think she herself is so multi-dimensional and very timely character that I think, and even with her brother, you saw that yes, he was more religious and a little more sanctimonious, but you also got to see his protective side of her.
Yeah.
And I think that makes sense in an older brother. So I think there's enough to relate to that, and I think there's enough stereotypes being shattered that I think that will, I personally, and again, I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone, I think that will offset anything that does to reinforce certain stereotypes.
I think where I end up landing on it is that I acknowledge that, yeah, that might be a stereotype, but it's really hard to balance being properly representing, you know, a culture, mm-hmm. and avoiding the stereotype, because as much as we may not like them, and there are some stereotypes that are just, you know, negative propaganda, but most stereotypes have some root somewhere. So there's some original kernel of truth, mm-hmm. and it can become a matter of, because I try and think, well, what was the alternative? Where if they make it less of that, and it's more like, oh, see how much they are like an all-American family. But then it becomes a matter of, well, this might as well be a story of white people. All you did was change the color. You're doing nothing to embrace, you know, what you chose to make them. Mm-hmm. They could be anything. And while there's a validity in that in terms of sort of cultural assimilation and getting an audience to understand, you know, that we're not all that different, it does feel like you're avoiding, mm-hmm. unique history and unique perspectives of that culture or that religion or what have you. So I think I think when you make your choice as to whether you're gonna go, okay, I'm gonna make this character's family this race, but I'm not gonna bring it up, and then you're just not dealing with it, or you're like, I'm really gonna get into it, and then you deal with, I think, a certain degree of being accused of stereotyping, because you have to address those things. You have to address where those stereotypes come from. So mm-hmm. I don't think there is a perfect solution. You're kind of accepting, this is what comes with what I've chosen to write. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, being someone who is in no position to,
I know,
have a perspective about much of this, I feel like I can see where the concern comes in, but I think, like you, I feel like it, especially Kamala herself, has enough nuance and dimension that it makes up for a lot, and the rest of it feels like simply trying to be as representative as possible for what is some degree of a relatable family experience for that population, mm-hmm. which again I can't speak to, but that's what it feels like was the aim was.
And I think we have to keep in mind that it's, some people can relate to that family situation who aren't necessarily Muslim.
That's true.
Plenty of, you know, more strict Christian families that might be able to relate to that, or, you know, in each race, each religion, you know, each different family structures just might be able to relate to that, the overbearing mother, the like kind of brother who is a little sanctimonious, you know, a little like bossy.
The father who goes, no, I get it, but you're still grounded.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see my father saying that, honestly. So I think we need to keep that in mind. I also think we need to keep in mind that this is the first volume. This is our first meeting, the family. They needed to focus on developing the main character and giving her nuance before they open up that to the family. And I think the fact that we've already seen a little bit of a different side, a little bit of nuance to her brother and father speaks a lot for probably what is going to happen. And I think we'll see a more multi-dimensional family life for her.
Yeah, that makes sense. Trying to think what else. I did like that. I like the sort of degree to which she is rebelling. Like, she does disobey. She does sneak out of the house. Mm-hmm. But she's never like, oh, my family sucks.
She loves her family.
Yeah, well, she does.
I would love them too. They're awesome. Even though mom is a little screechy, like, she means well, and I love the dad.
The dad is great. But I like when she's going into what she knows is the den of these bad guys who have lasers and super weapons. She has this thought to herself that, you know, I can't tell them what I'm doing, but I wish they could understand that it's the values they taught me that is driving me to do this, that the greater good is important, that you should defend others who can't defend themselves. You know, these are values she was raised with, and that it is the values they raised her with that's causing her to do that, even though she knows at the same time they would still not be okay.
Yes, I did like that about her, that I think she is the way she is and makes the decisions she is and is altruistic because of the way her family raised her and how much they care about her, even if, yes, they're strict and they put a curfew on her and are like, no, you're not going to go to parties, not be careful talking to boys, things like that. She rebels in a... She doesn't like break free, such as like Wiggles, you know.
she shakes the bars a little bit.
Yes, though I wouldn't say she's in a cage.
You're right.
She's got wiggle room.
That was a bad choice of words because it implies something that's not the case. But
yeah,
she's not trying to bang. She's not trying to break down walls, but she is just kind of, you know, pressing on him a little bit.
Like, what can I work with here? Like, I'm gonna stretch the bounds a little bit, you know, figure this out. So I really appreciate the values she has because of her family is, I think, the point I was trying to make.
So yeah, we don't get it, the focus is very much squarely on her. I think for our first volume, that's probably where it should be. Mm-hmm. So what were your thoughts in terms of like seeing her come to grips with her powers and sort of the first things that she started dealing with? And part of the reason I'm asking is because I know you felt like Batgirl got shortchanged because she had to go up against D-list villains.
I think Batgirl having to go up against those villains actually, and knowing, having read Batgirl first, helped me and be like, okay, she's got to start small. I get that. She's also not really in the thick of things by being in Jersey City instead of...
She's very much on the outskirts, yeah.
So that made a little more sense to me. She's also 16. And it's quite a bit younger than Barbara Gordon, so yeah. I think that made a difference too. I thought I was okay with it. That being said, I was like, well, why aren't we seeing the main villain until the very end? And I'm like, well, I guess they want a cliffhanger and to go into volume two with something. But I think it was a little bit too late to start talking about the main villain that she's going to meet up with in the next volume. I wanted that a little sooner. That being said, her, you know, I like that she saves Zoe's life, even though Zoe is awful. I would have probably helped Zoe, but it would have been much more of a struggle for me. I probably would have let Zoe get a little wetter and struggle a little more.
you can hold your breath for another 10 seconds before I drag you out of the river.
Yeah. She's got to start small. I like too that she isn't always like, I'm going to charge in here and fight everything and it's going to be great. I like that she's like, I can't handle this right now. I'm going to get myself out of here and regroup and figure this out. So I guess I kind of felt different than I did with Batgirl. Like with Batgirl, I was like, dang it, why does she have to go up against these like D-list villains? Why isn't she kicking butt already? But with Kamala, I think I understood it better. And I think I got that balance in her character. Like she's still really getting her footing. She's an awkward teenage girl. Like, I like that she's smart enough to know that I'm not gonna charge in here and fight and take over. And she's like, I'm gonna run out of here and figure this out first and think this over. So I appreciated that about her, which I didn't as much with Batgirl, I guess.
All right.
What was your take?
I thought it was pretty well built up. I thought it was weird, and I mean obviously I don't know how much Marvel has the writers who are writing, you know, individual issues. I don't know how much they have them pace with an eye on the trade volumes. And by saying that, I'm saying, you know, that the writer would have introduced the villain, you know, in the monthly issue where she thought was best, and that she may or may not have known when that would fall in terms of volumes of the trades.
That's true.
But again, at this point, Marvel and DC tend to have an eye on the trades a lot more than they used to, so she also might have been well aware. But sort of taking it as a volume unto itself, I almost feel like it would have been better to not get a full reveal on the character who's dubbed the Inventor. Mm-hmm. Like to just have him mentioned, but just have her deal with just this, you know, little kind of street gang thing in this house with their lasers and their robots, and maybe just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice one of the robots had a Karate Kid headband?
I did not notice that. I did notice. I mainly noticed the t-shirts and
I am a bad guy.
The gas station. Yeah. And the radioactive Razzleberry squishy. I just like the sound of that.
But I think a big part of maybe why this specific aspect worked better than in Batgirl Year One is that there was more of an emphasis on Kamala herself, and it probably helped that she actually had superpowers she had to figure out, which Batgirl didn't.
That's true. Batgirl, she's like, I remember her in the gym, in the locker room, being like, oh, okay, I'm gonna figure this out, and gets big all of a sudden and wrecks everything and then gets in trouble and she's like, oh crap.
Yeah. Whereas Barbara in Batgirl, she already had the skill set. She basically just needed to gear up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Kamala's got a whole other set of things to figure out.
And it's not like she just has one clear superpower. I actually had some confusion in the beginning with the shape-shifting, and I'm like, well, is she seeing herself one way and people are seeing her another way, and can she just shape-shift into one form or not? So it was good that they spent some time on it, because even as a reader, I had some trouble figuring it out.
Her powers are kind of loosely defined.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems to be variations on stretching, and the impression I get is that her shape-shifting is, you know, because she is stretching her body into a somewhat different
mm-hmm. It form. Also,
it seems to have a subconscious component as well, because initially when she thinks of herself as a superhero, she literally appears as
Captain Marvel,
as Carol Danvers when she was Ms. Marvel, complete with blonde hair,
mm-hmm.
and and a whole different look. So, but then later when she's trying to look like someone else, she accidentally turns into her mother. Mm-hmm. So there does seem to be a subconscious component, at least as far as that end of it goes.
It makes sense on a metaphorical level, her powers, a lot of them. The fact that shape-shifting, like, oh, you know, I'm trying to be someone else, figure out if I'm comfortable in someone else's skin. And I think that becomes less of a focus further on in the book as she embraces her powers and the fact that, yes, she has these powers, but she's still going to be her, and she's going to build herself her own superhero outfit, like incorporating a burkini and everything.
Her powers do kind of make more thematic sense than actual nuts and bolts logistic sense.
Yes, and the whole, as we were saying, she's one to stretch her family's curfews and limits on her, as opposed to like breaking through. So stretching as a power kind of makes sense. So I think her powers work on a metaphorical level.
I think we've hit everything I had.
Yeah, I think most of my things as well. Yeah.
Oh, I think the other thing worth mentioning, because Liz found this, obviously, my level of quote unquote research, you know, that thing that I don't do. But you found a TED Talk by the author, mm-hmm. Which I would encourage anyone to seek out, because it's a really interesting look into her mindset when approaching this work, particularly in terms of her thoughts on the readership, on the audience. And it was pretty insightful stuff.
We will probably link it.
Yes.
I will afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the author put a lot of thought into her audience and who it was, and the TED Talk we watched was in 2015, and I was like, she kind of knew what direction we were headed in. Huh. Yeah. She was very insightful. So it was a really good TED Talk, but you could tell she put a lot of thought into her audience, especially as millennials who are going through a lot and who are looking for hope but are angry at the same time. How to move forward in terms of social justice was the main thread of her talk, put much more articulately by her. Of course I mess up the word articulate. All right then. One other thing I did notice in my notes was given her values and the things her family stresses, how I was amused by how convinced she was that it was her drink that was making everything strange happen. Like, even though she had a sip and
she,
then
she had a sip of alcohol accidentally and then spit it out immediately.
She's like, that's why all this mist is happening. This is why I'm having all these strange powers. Like, there was something in my drink that must have been it. That little, like, the tiny bit that hit my lips and might have accidentally been swallowed is what is doing all of this. Clearly. And I just thought that was great, and I was like, wow, definitely hitting the anti-alcohol message strongly and taking it to the extreme. But as someone who was also kind of a goody-goody as a teen at that age, I probably would have freaked a little bit too. So I got where she was coming from.
Yeah, wait, when you have your very first sip of alcohol and then next thing you know your body is completely changed and is stretching weird.
And there's sloths with wings. Like, come on. And people are singing. Superheroes are singing. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, there's a detail for you that I think is worth bringing up real quick, because it's just fun, that she is into Avengers fan fiction.
Uh-huh. Yes. There's some great...
She's writing about the Avengers saving, like, the unicorn planet. Or something like that. It's really sweet.
It's pretty. It's trippy fun. So.
So I think we'll wrap it up on that one. This is one I think we both enjoyed a lot. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could say we'll definitely get to volume two, except our backlog is so huge. Oh, it's going to be a while before we start getting to later volumes of stuff we've already covered. Mm-hmm. But on a personal level, yeah, I would like to certainly read that. Here's your endorsement. I want to read the second volume and not just for this podcast. I just want to read it.
I'm in the same boat. I'm glad we've got through the origin bits and now we can just see Kamala take on more serious villains, get a little more of Bruno crushing on her, learn more about her family, see them grow as well. I think it's going to be a fun journey with Ms. Marvel.
But it's certainly a solid start. So thank you so much for joining us, folks. And we'll see you again in a month.
Yes, see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Punch Like a Girl is a Council of Geeks production.
Feedback can be left at the Facebook page and at punchlikeagirlpod.wordpress.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at punchlikeagirl1.
The logo and cover art are drawn by Nick Buxom.
The theme music is composed and recorded by Erica Dreisbach, whose other works can be found at ericaricardo.com.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye!